Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, becoming Brahman does not mean losing one's identity. One who is fully conversant with the Krishna conscious science becomes eligible to enter into the spiritual kingdom, the abode of Krishna. Becoming Brahman does not mean that one loses his identity. Devotional service is there, and as long as devotional service exists, there must be God, the devotee in the process of devotional service. Such knowledge is never vanquished, even after liberation. Liberation involves getting free from the concept of material life. So one is still, how you say, such knowledge is still there, but the knowledge is not important as the process of elevation or situating oneself on the spiritual platform. The knowledge then becomes what is useful for service to Krishna. Right, so then, still, the living entity, the Lord in devotional service remains. So even though it's the Brahman platform, it doesn't mean that one loses one's identity. Liberation involves getting free from the concept of material life. In spiritual life, the same distinction is there. The same individuality is there. But in pure Krishna consciousness, one should not mistakenly think that the word viṣate enters into me, supports the monist theory that one becomes homogeneous with the impersonal Brahman. No, viṣate means that one can enter into the abode of the Supreme Lord in one's individuality to engage in his association and render service unto him. For instance, a green bird enters a green tree not to become one with the tree, but to enjoy the fruits of the tree. Right, so that's the Mayavadi example, green bird and the green tree, but they forget that the bird's still a bird and the tree's still a tree. But, you know, they kind of finesse that part of it. Impersonalists generally give the example of a river flowing into the ocean and merging. This may be a source of happiness for the impersonalist, but the personalist keeps his personal individuality like an aquatic in the sea and in the ocean. We find so many living entities within the ocean if we go deep. Surface acquaintance with the ocean is not sufficient. One must have complete knowledge of the aquatics living in the ocean depths. Because it means you look at the ocean when we say the river goes into the ocean. So in the example, we're only describing the surface. So you just see the river is going, it goes into the ocean, and then it just is ocean. Where does it go? It's just the same as the ocean. But what they're not checking is if you go into the ocean, it's full of aquatics. So there's still living entities. They make it look like it's all one. But no, it's still living entities. In the footnote, 2. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 114, I offer my respects to the devotees who are like makaras, kings amongst fishes, frolicking in the sweet ocean of devotional rasa, who disregard the insignificant rivers of liberation, and who are free from fear caused by the net of time. Well, this is the acharyas, when they write this philosophy, they can write it so poetically. That's the nice thing. Devotional service continues after liberation. Oh no, it keeps going. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on this verse as follows. The makara is an aquatic animal and is called the king of fish. The devotees are similar to the makara in three ways. One, the devotees as makaras joyfully swim in the unlimited bhakti rasa, which is compared to an ocean of nectar, which is the final shelter of various types of rivers of liberation, and it is full of the highest bliss. Two, they ignore liberation, which is compared to a river, the happiness emerging in Brahman. Even though that happiness cuts the bondage of birth and death, and even though that happiness flows eternally, just as the river provides relief and flows constantly without ever stopping, the devotees ignore liberation because they prefer to play in the ocean of bhakti rasa. Three, in the ocean of bhakti rasa, they disregard the fear of time, which causes a succession of miseries through the bondage of birth and death, just as fish swimming in the deep ocean are freed from the fear of the fisherman's nets. Because if only if you're on the surface, then you have to worry about the nets. If you're very deep, then. So time, because time creates, you know, the temporary aspect, right? Birth, death, old age, everything degrading, that's time. Time means movement. Right? So here time causes that degradation. But there, in the spiritual world, there's no influence of time. I mean, there's a concept of time, but it does not in any way create the destruction of anything, right, as it does here. After attainment of the Brahma-Bhuta, Srimad Bhagavatam 4:30-20, of the Brahma-Bhuta stage of freedom from material conceptions, devotional service begins by one's hearing about the Lord. When one hears about the Supreme Lord, automatically the Brahma-Bhuta stage develops, and material contamination, greediness and lust for sense enjoyment disappears. Because right? It's one engages in sense gratification, one wants more. Right? And so there's no end to it. Just like if you pour ghee in the fire, then you can put more. The fire gets bigger, so then you put more. So it just gets more and more. It's not that it goes away. But the Brahma-Bhuta stage, then that disappears.
Is that because you mentioned there's no opportunity does not see any opportunity for that?
He doesn't see the opportunity. Not that the opportunity is not there. It's just not seen. Mm-hmm. It's not seen as an opportunity. You know what I'm saying?
Something else.
Just like, let's say, you have your cat, right? And then you have your goldfish. Mm. So you look at them as two pets. But the cat looks at the goldfish as, you know, a snack. And it's just waiting for you to leave before it sticks its paw in there and tries to. Right? Is that what he says? So it's a perception. So it's just, you don't see it in that way. Right? But the difficulty is that the materialist sees the material world as opportunities for sense gratification. Right? That's how it works. Whatever the situation, it'll be analyzed in connection with sense gratification. If you can analyze and find something, then, okay, nice. If you analyze and don't find anything, then, you know, it's boring. Let's get out of here. Right? Does that make sense? So that's how it works. So, for the spiritualist, he analyzes the situation for service to Krishna. He finds some, great. He doesn't find some, then he moves from that situation. Does that make sense? So it's not that, you know, they can't see anymore. They're kind of transcendental blindness or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's as lust and desires disappear from the heart of the devotee, he becomes more attached to the service of the Lord. And by such attachment, he becomes free from material contamination. Right? So as they go down by the performance of devotional service, then there's more of an attachment to devotional service, so then they go away even quicker. In that state of life, he can understand the Supreme Lord. This is the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam also. Because how will you understand the Lord if we're seeing the Lord as opportunities for sense gratification? Right? Means we're looking at dead matter, and we're thinking it's alive, and that I can get some enjoyment out of that. So we're not seeing God, because we just see the opportunity for how we can enjoy that. We don't understand that what makes it work is God. Right? And even if we could catch that to some degree, but the point is if you're using that for one's own sense gratification, you still not know who God is, because that is still, we're only dealing with the Brahman platform. Right? So the personality will never be understood. Right? This is the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam also. After liberation, the process of bhakti, or transcendental service, continues. The Vedanta Sutra 4.1.12 confirms this. A prayanat tatrapi hidrishtam. This means that after liberation, the process of devotional service continues. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, real devotional liberation is defined as the reinstatement of the living entity in his own identity, his own constitutional position. Footnote 3. The merging of the living entity, along with his conditional living tendency, with the mystic lying down of the Mahavishnu, is called the winding up of the cosmic manifestation. Liberation is the permanent situation of the form of the liberate entity after he gives up the changeable, gross, and subtle material bodies. Right? Emerging, okay, it's called winding up. So he has his conditional living tendency, which means the desire to control and enjoy. Right? So it's not permanent. Right? But liberation is permanent cessation of that. So that means there is no gross or subtle material bodies. In other words, when at the end of creation, when everyone's wound up into the Lord, right, that material identity is still with them. So when there's the next creation, then they just continue where they left off.
Maharaj said that the devotee rejects liberation because of this principle, that devotional service continues, so it's already included?
It's already included. He rejects liberation as just a platform to be on, because then what do? You do nothing. So you're not recognizing yourself or situation or relationship with the Lord, so there's no service. So it's not of any attraction to the devotee, yes.
He would probably never think about it because he's already liberated in service
to
the Lord.
Yeah, it's just like, let's say the man in prison. Mm-hmm. Does he think about getting out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, now the man who's not in prison, does he go walk around the street and go, I'm free, I'm not in prison?
Rarely.
Huh?
Rarely. He wouldn't do that.
No. Yeah, he wouldn't do. If he just got out of prison, he might for a little bit, but after some time, then it just becomes normal. So it's, one doesn't worry about that, because one has positive engagement. Mm-hmm. The constitutional position is already explained. Every living entity is a part and parcel, fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, his constitutional position is to serve. After liberation, the service is never stopped. Actual liberation is getting free from misconceptions of life. So here is that when Prabhupada is talking about the constitutional position, he's dealing with the actual facts of it. You know, meaning is that we're part and parcel, fragmental portion of the Supreme. Right? And our position is to serve. So that's what we do. That's the main thing. That's the principle. Detail is what is the nature of the rasa ones in to serve with. That's a detail. Right? Most will make that into the major point. But the point is if the detail is brought so prominently without the principle being in place, then it's a matter of rasa. And if it's not spiritual, then what will it be? Yeah. But I'm saying it will be material, right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So the relationship will go on because you're thinking it's spiritual, then you think you're getting some benefit, but it still doesn't necessarily mean it is. It'll be material. Mm-hmm. Right? Because all relationships are still happening with Krishna anyway. Mm-hmm. Right? We think it's the dead man. Mm-hmm. Right? 7.3. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. The path of bhakti is not easy. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. The primeval Lord, Govinda. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradi Govinda Sarvakara Nakarana. It is very difficult for the non-devotees to know him. Although non-devotees declare that the path of bhakti, or devotion of service, is very easy, they cannot practice it. The path of bhakti is so easy, as the non-devotee class of men proclaim, then why do they take up the difficult path? Right? Actually, the path of bhakti is not easy. So-called path of bhakti practiced by unauthorized persons, without knowledge of bhakti, may be easy. But when it is practiced factually, according to the rules and regulations, the speculative scholars and philosophers fall away from the path. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.101, devotional service to the Lord that ignores the authorized Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, Puranas, and Narada Pancharatra is simply an unnecessary disturbance in society. Right? So you can tell this verse, our academics not here, but your opening courses before you get into anything is always 101.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So therefore this is the basis of all the other things. So this is devotional service 101.
Yeah, exactly.
Is this verse. So it's not easy, it means it's a very simple path, but because of our attachment that makes it difficult. Right? So that's actually where difficulty or ease come in, is your acceptance of it or not. Right? You know, it's just like, let us say, going out, let's say it's, cold, windy, and snowing outside. Okay? And, the mail is out in the box way out at the, on the end of the, you have to walk out of the house down the walkway, and it's there at the, where the sidewalk is, right? This may be too esoteric for a European, but, Americans, Australians, it's pretty common, right? No?
Mailbox?
The mailbox outside.
Yeah. Have that. When you have an apartment, where is it? In houses, they do that. You actually have lawn between the house and the sidewalk?
In Europe, sometimes.
Sometimes.
Some places.
Yeah. Okay, so this is not a foreign concept. Okay, now let's say, is it a difficult thing to walk, a few meters out there, get it, and walk back? Is the process difficult?
Depends if it's slippery,
Let's say it's not slippery. No, it's not. But the cold and the wind and all that and the snow, you might not be inclined, right? Though it's actually quite easy.
And it's warm inside, there's a fire going.
Yeah, of course. But let us say you have a mountain climber, right? And it's windy, it's snowing, and it's cold. But does he find it difficult?
No.
No, he enjoys it. But the process he's following is more difficult because he's having to go up some stone cliff. You understand? So that's the thing, is they enjoy that difficulty. Right? The devotion, but the devotional path is not difficult, but because of having to give up the whole idea of controlling and enjoying, that's what makes it difficult. That's why they can't do it. So that's why I say these speculative scholars and philosophers fall away from the path, because you have to give up that speculative, that taste for that speculation. Yes.
So they're not able to expand the field enough so that they can see the overall benefit and thereby gain the mentality that would drive them through this process?
Well, because there's the element is that intellectually they may be able to, appreciate the benefits in that. But the point is you actually have to do it.
Mm.
So that's the thing. In sadhana is you're actually applying it. That's why we say it's with devotional service you'll understand the Lord, not with the knowledge gained. You'll understand. It doesn't say that by studying the Vedic knowledge you'll understand Krishna.
No.
It's by applying the Vedic knowledge and service to Krishna that you'll understand.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So knowledge is necessary for activity, but it's only through the devotional activity that God will be realized. Because it's devotional service means the prayojan is for the Lord. So you have all three aspects. It's complete. Well, in the speculation, you only have knowledge. It's not applied, therefore there can't be a result.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Mm. So all their only activity is further contemplating the knowledge. So that gives some, more filling out of detail. Mm. But it doesn't actually give any understanding or realization like that. So what it's for, it won't give more.
Mm.
Yes.
As a devotee, as you mentioned, the devotee's pleasure that he's enjoying to overcome these difficulties. This is like for him nice. So for devotees also that we are overcoming to give up these attachments. So this is making it difficult. So we have to learn the art how to enjoy these difficulties?
No, because it says you're not becoming happy, elated in happiness or lamenting in distress. So it's a matter of the nutra, we are happy doing service. You understand?
But sometimes it's difficult.
No, but you're reversing your point. So you're saying sometimes the service is difficult, but the point is to remove the attachment is also difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be that? You know what I'm saying? You're talking about the happiness. But it's his point is if the service is difficult, removal of attachment is also difficult. You know what I'm saying? So the difficulty is always going to be there. Devotional service, the technique is not difficult. You have to chant, dance, and take prasad. It's not difficult. But because of attachment, it's difficult. But for the materialist, even though the path he chooses itself is difficult because of attachment, he doesn't see it as so difficult. Even though it is. So the reason the scholars and philosophers fall away, because the mental speculation, all these other things, though they're quite difficult, to them it doesn't bother them because they get their material enjoyment from it. And the reason they can't take up devotional service is because they have to give up their material enjoyment. You know what I'm saying? So one may say, but the karmic can engage his activities. Let's say the person is attached to family life, so he can engage his family life in Krishna service. Right? So one could say that. So why not the jnanis? No? So then the point is though what is the karmi engaging? Means you perform the activity and then
you engage the results.
The results in Krishna's service. That's what makes it devotional service. But the problem is the jnani, he speculates. There is no conclusion, so there's nothing to offer to the Lord. So they can never understand. Because the result has to be offered to the Lord. And his happiness is speculating, not in getting a result. Does that make sense?
That verse that says, from devotional service, knowledge and renunciation.
Yes, knowledge and renunciation automatically come. So just by performing devotional service, then you'll understand everything. One will become detached, one will understand. Mm-hmm. You know, so by performing devotional service, the facilities to do more service automatically come. Yeah, so here, there's also the authorized literatures, Upanishads, Puranas, Narada, Pancharatra, is a simply an unnecessary disturbance. So it's not like some things can be a disturbance, but this is an unnecessary disturbance.
All right. So can we say from this verse that, you know, because sometimes devotees are fascinated with all these new things coming and this and that, and they say, oh, this is so good, and this is actually, that's what it is.
It means if it's authorized, then it's mixed. But if it's unauthorized, then it's just purely mundane.
Mostly it's unauthorized, it's just people creating their own ideas.
Yeah, no, that's there. But I'm just saying, let's say we've just read in some new chapter or something in Bhagavatam or that we didn't see, but it's very interesting because there's all new information and so many things to think about. But because it's connected to the Lord, then it's not a problem. But if it's a matter of the you know, other, you know, processes like we were discussing this morning, they go out to Radha Kund and find all kinds of new processes, you know, like that, something hidden, something unknown. Like that, that's all unauthorized. So it's just an unnecessary disturbance because it doesn't gain anything. It doesn't actually gain love for Krishna. You know. You know what I'm saying? Cause it's like the turtles in Radha Kund. They can't be. You know, it's not some guy, you know, walking down the street in New York. You know, gets hit by a car and then becomes a turtle in New York. I mean, in Radha Kund, maybe a turtle in New York, but not in Radha Kund. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So the point is who's going to become a turtle in Radha Kund? Other than those who are somehow or another connected to Radha Kund, but not in a proper fashion. You know, the service to Radha Kund generally means you're not a turtle. You know?
Russian turtles.
How do you tell a Russian turtle? They speak in Russian. They have a hammer and sickle on their leg. You turn them over, there's a hammer and sickle on the bottom or something.
They'll be austere. Austere turtles, right?
Huh?
Russians are austere.
Ah. So it means if you put down some buckwheat on the side, then they'll come out of the water and eat that. That's how you tell. You put down a cabbage, or you put down a beet, and you put down a cauliflower, and you see which they eat.
You play a balalaika, and they start doing the Cossack thing.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, something like that. You know, there's different ways you can tell. Lesson 2. Real happiness is obtained only through this transcendental loving service. So, means, what was that? The first one was, Lord can only be known through devotional service, and real happiness is only obtainable through transcendental loving service. Because knowledge is sambandha, and happiness is prayojana. You know, so these two are our worry. It means if our situation is perfectly how we want it, and our happiness is perfectly how we want it, we don't think about doing anything. Huh?
To worry.
Worry, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So there's nothing to do. No, females are always active. Like that. Because then there's so many things there. It's perfect. But which aspect of perfection do you get into? You know, do you sit there? Do you, you know, go eat something? Do you call your friends? Or, you know what I'm saying? You go shopping. It can drive you nuts.
That's why.
Okay, so this is 714, 719, 728, and 1866. That's interesting. You put them all. Oh, I guess he didn't understand. He put him off at the beginning, not the end. Didn't he put it in another place the other one? That was the last one. Okay. 7:14. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. After many, many births, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very well, rare. Where did they get well from? Where did they get well from? Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Where is the four? Oh, there's a footnote on the Panchayatra. Okay, let's do the footnote first. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 1:5:16. Theological science is a difficult subject, especially when it deals with the transcendental nature of God. It is not a subject matter to be understood by persons who are too much attached to material activities. Right? So material activities is karma and jnana. So that's why the academic pursuit will not make understanding Godhead any easier. It is not a... Only the very expert who have almost retired from materialistic activities by culture of spiritual knowledge can be admitted to the study of this great science. Who've almost retired means basically you've given up the concept, or at least you've given up the concept that I'm the controller and enjoyer. By practice, one may not have obtained that platform. So it's not that it's all right to be a little bit of an... No, it's that you know it's not to be done, but by habit, we still are to some degree. Right? They can be admitted to this great science. And the Bhagavad Gita is clearly stated that out of many hundreds and thousands of men, only one person deserves to enter into transcendental realization. And out of many thousands of such transcendentally realized persons, only a few can understand the theological science specifically dealing with God as a person. Sri Vyasadeva is therefore advised by Narada to describe the science of God directly by relating his transcendental activities. Vyasadeva is himself a personality expert in the science, and he is unattached to material enjoyment. Therefore, he is the right person to describe it. And Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, is the right person to receive it. Okay, so continue to abandon all varieties of religion. Those who are attached to Krishna are the most fortunate. One should be attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna. His name is Krishna because he is all attractive. One who becomes attracted by the beautiful, all-powerful, omnipotent vision of Krishna is fortunate. There are different kinds of transcendentalists. Some of them are attached to the impersonal Brahman vision. Some of them are attracted by the supersoul feature, etc. But one who is attracted to the personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and above all, one who is attracted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna himself, is the most perfect transcendentalist. In other words, devotional service to Krishna in full consciousness is the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, so one who's doing devotional, one can be admitted in devotional service who's given up the material concept. Right? Then, by performing it, then one can know the Lord, and that's how one will actually be happy. Right, because anything else would be, yes.
In the previous page, 7:28.
Yes.
It seems that we're not falling in any of those categories.
We are not.
Yeah. And still we practice devotional service, although...
You're not a person.
No, I am.
Okay, so that one you got.
Check.
Yeah, check. Okay. You have acted before, right?
Yeah, but not biasly.
I mean, so what were you acting?
I don't know.
Lear, Macbeth, anything. Hmm? Cabaret, can't take it with you.
Well,
Waiting for Godot, maybe? No? If you were in Peer Gynt, then that's acting impiously. But otherwise.
I can't catch the last ball.
You lost them.
Okay. Acted piously, but what does piously mean? Piously means that devotional service.
According to religious principles.
Yeah, but the thing is where devotional service itself comes up. You can't do devotional service on its own. The materialist can't. You can only get it from the Lord or the devotees. Now, in the beginning, because of our attachment, we don't actually take up devotional service, because that's what I was saying, because we're not admitted into this great science because of our attachment. Right? So that means that when we come in contact with the devotees in devotional service, we perform agyata sukriti, which is unknown pious activity. So when that increases, then we take up devotional service. Does that make sense? So, therefore, we've come in contact with it, and that's the cause of it. So the devotees, you know, create that fortunate situation. You know, it's like the person who goes to work every day, and, you know, the devotees are on the corner doing Harinam. You know, so he'll walk by and think it's weird, and after a while he'll be amused by it, and then one day he might go up and ask them what they're doing. So that's a hearing. Then slowly, slowly, as piety increases, where then that interest is there. Right? And then by interest, then he'll take up association. By association, then he'll take up practices. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Then he'll be able to understand. Because studying is also part of the practice. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But here it says, another point here is with determination.
Yeah.
So it can be that you are perform the activities, but it's not so determined. Means then the activities of previous, you know, the how you say, the distraction of the consciousness is still there's still some element of delusion. Right. But as that delusion clears, then we're functioning in determination, because this is coming in this line of after many births, right? Someone who knows that they're slowly coming through. You know, the living entity. You have so many living entities. Those who are intelligent are greater than those who are intelligent than those who, you know the shastra. Those who know the shastra. Those who practice. Of those who practice and those who have understood. You know. You know what I'm saying? It's a gradual process.
Yeah. It just appears to me that in some cases it's like a big jump.
But how did that jump happen? That's
by the performance of devotional service.
Yeah. So that's the element. But how did devotional service happen?
By meeting the devotees.
Yeah, so still it's by the association of devotees.
Yeah.
So then that's the pious activity. But you didn't arrange the pious activity, they did. You know, like that. So, but in any case, it's still, you're there. Whether you arrange Rath Yatra or they arrange Rath Yatra, you're there. Right? So that's the point. So then it just happens. Point is how much, you know, you happen to be walking down the street. You know, it happened to be the same street that Rath Yatra's on, and it's going in the same direction, and there's plenty of people. So you're going to be in the Rath Yatra ceremony for quite a while. You know, you weren't planning it, but, you know, this You know what I'm saying? So therefore, by that association, it just... As the Prabhupada means by he made our fortune. So we didn't necessarily have those, you know, volume of pious activities from previous lives, so he would create it in this life. Yeah.
If we continue the same virtual prophet, he wasn't so much stressing about his he was, let's put it, that he was stressing the active devotional service.
Yes.
And maybe less intellectual process.
No, he didn't stress it less. It's just that for how many devotees is intellectual pursuit important?
There are some.
There are some, yeah. Yeah, so those individuals generally did it. They actually read the books. Like Satsarup Maharaj actually read Nectar of Devotion.
The only one?
It appears so. He read Nectar of Devotion. So in 1970, when some devotees started professing Mayavad philosophy, he was the only one that actually could speak the philosophy to defeat them. Right? So then Prabhupada therefore created a morning program, you know, which is a standard program. But it's a Pancharatra program. But he created the program so that every day, morning and evening, devotees would at least that much hear the class, you know, the philosophy. But he made the comment how the devotees don't read his books. So, you know, and he talked about, you know, how both Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Rai, Bhakti, Bhakti, like, you know. He thought that by, I think it was by 76, yeah, by 76, because he was talking about in the 60s, that there would be devotees who have studied up to the Bhakti Vedanta platform. So he did talk about it, just very few noticed it. Like that. And temple commanders definitely never liked devotees to study, because it means they're not working. So.
Since from an economical point of view again,
yes, or it's just conditioning, but we're not used to it. If we were more academic ourselves and more studious ourselves, then we'd be inclined by conditioning to study.
Some people don't like it.
Yeah, and if we're not, you know, if we're just practical, then we'd be doing activities. If we just exist, then we just, you know, do what everybody tells us, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So. It's more that Prabhupada would talk about it, the importance of the science, how one should study the science, know the science, but it doesn't dawn on us that that means there should be regular, you know, study. Does that make sense? One who becomes attracted by the beautiful, all-powerful, omnipotent vision of Krishna is fortunate. There are different kinds of transcendentalists. Some of them are attached to the impersonal Brahman. Can we just read this? No. But how did we get back here and then figure out that we didn't?
He made a question.
Oh, because he made the question and I noticed the footnote. Okay. Okay. Is that okay? In other words, somehow or another, that's why the term somehow or another. So somehow or another we got here and somehow or another we came in contact with devotional service. So those details we don't so much need to worry about. It happened.
Maharaj, this element, only because you got in contact with the devotee, is it makes, sorry, this element that only by getting in contact with the devotee we take up devotional service,
yes,
makes a devotee very dear to Krishna, is that?
Yeah, right? Yeah. So the devotee that is in a position where you could contact and therefore be exposed to devotional service, that's always going to be very pleasing to Krishna, as opposed to someone who's, you know,
so out of the way no one finds them. Right? It has to be that there's an availability. That's just like the Vanaprastha. He has a lot of experience in family life. And now being, having been through family life and now being basically retracting himself from it, then there'll be much more understanding, you know, if he applies it. So that's why it says that the Vanaprastha should not be, the Vanaprastha has to be available. So he can live on the edge of the village or the edge of the forest. Right? So he's available. Right? But there's the rule of sannyasi doesn't have to be. You can be out in the middle of the forest. No one will find him. Right? But for preaching, then one is there for where one's available. Right? So here we're on the edge of the village. Well, I guess the edge of the village, yeah, you could say that. Or on the edge of the cement jungle. So we're kind of in between. Okay. Lesson 3. Man tries to remove his difficulties by work, and when baffled in that attempt, he tries to get rid of the material bondage by an exercise of the mental faculty. But real happiness does not lie within either the bodily or the mental plane. 621-22. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, he is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. Transcendental. So the key here is transcendental senses. So I'm not talking about that joyous state simply being only the Brahman platform, but that means the Brahman platform with devotional service, otherwise how it will be experienced through the senses. The duality of knowledge and knower is not accepted by the non-dualist. But in this verse, transcendental pleasure, realized through transcendental senses, is accepted. And this is corroborated by Patanjali Muni, the famous exponent of the yoga system. The great sage declares in his Yoga Sutras, 334, Purushartha shunyanam gunanam prati prasava kaivalyam swarupa pratishtha va chiti shaktiriti. This chit shakti, or internal potency, is transcendental. Purushartha means material religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and at the end the attempt to become one with the Supreme. This oneness with the Supreme is called Kaivalyam by the monist, but according to Patanjali, this Kaivalyam is an internal or transcendental potency by which the living entity becomes aware of its constitutional position. In the words of Lord Chaitanya, this state of affairs is called Chaito-Darpana-Marjana. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antilila, 20.12. Or clearance of the impure mirror of the mind. This clearance is actually liberation, or Bhava Maha Davagni Nirvanam. The theory of Nirvana, also preliminary, corresponds with this principle. In the Bhagavatam 2.10.6, this is called Sorupena Vyavastiti. The Bhagavad Gita also confirms this situation in this verse. 5. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes in his commentary to 6.23, know that what destroys the connection with sorrow to be yoga or samadhi. In the initial stages, that yoga should be performed with the conviction that if I make great effort, I will succeed. It should be performed with a heart devoid of despair, which thinks, it is impossible for me to do this. In other words, it should be performed with enthusiasm, like the bird who attempted to dry up the ocean which stole her eggs. Right? It appears impossible, right? How would the sparrow, because it's not that they picked a big bird, you know, it wasn't like an albatross or a dodo or what do you call it, even bigger than those. What were those guys called? The moas. Right? In New Zealand, they had this bird. It was like as tall as this room, called the moas.
They're like an ostrich, that big, like that. And the people used to, I guess, live there and eat them, so they were called the Moa Moas. Right? And then the Maoris came along from Polynesia in their boats, and they used to fight with them, you know, for dominance over the place. And they had a tradition, whenever you defeat the other persons, you'd eat them. Because then you get their shakti and their qualities like that. Like I think when Captain Cook and all that got over that side, they defeated him or something, and they ate him, and they brought back the bones nicely polished back to the ship, you know, out of respect, you know, that, you know, he was such a great person, we ate him, you know, and somehow or another the Europeans didn't appreciate the sentiment like that. So with time, then the Maoris became the only, how you say, culture in New Zealand, because they had eaten all of the Moa Moas, or the Moa Hutas. I think they're also known as Moa Hutas.
So karma hits back. They were eating birds and then somebody ate them,
yeah. Yes. Okay, so it appears impossible, because so what's used is that's a little dinky bird, so it's not going to be able to do much with the ocean, right? And so, but because the determination is there, then the Lord's devotees support, and then there was a problem with that. Yeah, we read the other day, wasn't it, that Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, and I think Garuda are representatives of the Brahman feature of the Lord. Anantasesh also. Anantasesh, the four Kumaras, Shiva, and Garuda.
Didn't Prabhupada say impossible is a word
in the full scripture? Yes.
And that refers to materialistic way of thinking.
Yeah, because the point is we're thinking I'm going to do it, but it's not us doing it anyway. You know, it doesn't mean that we're not practical, that if by doing it one way it would be basically impossible, but by doing another way it would be easier. Why pick the more difficult way? But if there is no other way, then if that's what needs to be done, then that's what's done. Does that make sense? Yeah, so
in association with devotees, association that helps again, how to improve ourselves.
I don't see the connection to impossible. You meaning it's impossible associated with devotees? Oh, you're going previous to that.
No, something that you said there. Then.
So then try again.
No, it's gone, sorry.
Oh, okay. That happens to me too. Give a little distraction.
Where am I?
Regarding practicality and pragmatism. Sometimes we hear devotees, they say things like, I want to go to India. Do you have money? No, but Krishna will help somehow or other.
Yeah, so but if it works, then...
If it's, you know, sometimes it does. Sometimes they just don't want... You know, sometimes people just let's say lazy. They don't want to work for that, or they just...
Well, then they don't go.
Some do. Still. So it's kind of, you know, for me it always seems like a burden on Krishna.
I mean, but the point is if it's service to Krishna, you're trying to please Krishna through the service, so even though the service is difficult, why are they going to India? To just to see, just to that. But then it's a matter of to render service. So then somehow or another it'll work. Because we're only assisting anyway. That was the point, I think, what we were getting at before. We're only an assistant anyway. So we're not actually doing it. We think we're doing it. That's the difficulty. So that's the point, is that we think by work then if that doesn't work, then by mental speculation, then we'll be happy. But devotional service is by not following either of those. So if you don't follow either of those, then that becomes difficult, because how do you identify? Because you've always worked for your happiness or speculated for your happiness. Right? In some sense. Yeah.
So in assistance, Maharaj?
So then one could say whatever it was. Just like in Bodhi Yoga, you combine karma and jnana, you know, devotional service. So on the material platform, if you can connect it, you know, karma, fruit of labor, with speculation, right? Then you get gambling. Right? That would be the perfect. So by regular work or by then you. Yeah?
In assistance, then how far should we go?
In assistance.
In assistance, how much endeavor should?
Oh, in insistence.
No, in assistance, because we assist the Lord.
So how far? What means?
How much endeavor should be?
The point is it something? How important is that service? Does the field afford that? You know, it's just like remembering Krishna. That's something that you have to do. So even if the situation is impossible, still you try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you've decided that. You know, you could either, you know, distribute books or, you know, build a big monstrous, you know, you're going to buy one square block of, you know, land in central Moscow and build the biggest temple that there ever was, right? You know, so if that's going to be, you know, it's not like now it's necessary, therefore distribute books. In other words, don't find something impossible to do.
Okay.
What you're supposed to do, even if it's impossible, you continue doing it. Right? Otherwise, you know, I mean, there could be. Has anybody thought about? Because I mean, the farmers are thinking about it, right? You know, about, you know, selling land on the moon and traveling to the moon. Have we ever thought of setting up at least a preaching center? Yes, like Prasadam distribution, or, you know, yeah, for the visitors, you know, they're all going there. So, you know, has anybody thought about that? I'm doing moon preaching.
Many do already.
Yeah. Okay. That's.
There's no temple in Moscow.
Huh?
There's no temple in Moscow.
Yeah. No, I think there's like four of them. Did you figure out what you were thinking about before? Just totally evaporated. Okay. Okay. 341. Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses, and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. So lust is the symbol of sin, because it destroys knowledge and self-realization. Right? Because knowledge means it'll cover it, self-realization means that you have to take that knowledge and practice it. So it keeps you from getting the knowledge, so therefore it keeps you from the practice. Right? That's the problem with lust. Right? Because it's so overwhelming that the intelligence is lost. So if there's no intelligence, how will the action that is performed be of any value?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that lust is a problem on its own, it's that it gets in the way of devotional service. Because we're supposed to remember Krishna, not forget. So lust means there's a desire for something other than Krishna. Does that make sense? That's why it's a problem.
Is there such a thing as lust on its own?
No, but we will. Why I use that term is that somebody will get involved in morality or religiosity or liberation, you know, or in this case, sense God, that it itself has its own standing or value. But the point is still the power of lust is still Cupid. Cupid is Prajumna.
Yeah.
So still it's coming from Krishna. It doesn't, but we'll think that it itself, so the problem is not connected to the Lord. Right? That's the difficulty. So that in the very beginning curbed this great sin by regulating the senses. If the senses are regulated, it cuts down on lust, because lust has an element of its spontaneity. Right? So if things are regulated, then that spontaneous element, material. In other words, we're trying to regulate, we're trying to create vitae in materialism, right?
Yeah.
So that then we can develop rag in the spiritual. But right now we have rag in the material and may or may not have any vitae in the spiritual. Right? Yeah. Right, that's the... In order to curb lust, one should regulate the senses. The Lord advised Arjuna to regulate the senses from the very beginning so that he could curb the greatest sinful enemy, lust, which destroys the urge for self-realization and specific knowledge of the self. Right? So, yeah. And sin, as we described before, it's described as greatest sinful enemy because sin means it's not connected to Krishna. Piety means it is. Right? Does that make sense? That's our definition. Right? For the non-devotees, then, what is authorized is pious, and what's unauthorized is sin. Right? Means by the scriptures, on the material platform. But if we look at it, what's authorized is devotional service. So anything performed in devotional service is piety. Anything not performed under the authority of devotional service is sin. Right?
So the motive for that sin would be lust.
So the?
Motive.
Yes, lust. Because lust is your desire, your goal. Right? Desire is the interest in it. Right? But then lust will be the need for it. So that's what's actually going to... power, yes.
And the spontaneity is...
That's why you don't contemplate something. Because if desire comes up, if at that point you stop it, nothing will happen. But if you contemplate it, it'll turn into it'll turn into lust. Yes.
And the spontaneity is to make it look like something is there, because you can. I just said that lust thrives on spontaneity. So if it's regulated, you can see that nothing is actually.
Yeah.
There.
Then it's because the point is you're interested when the desire is there.
Yeah.
But if there's no desires there, now you're supposed to do it. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that people do a lot of crazy things because they do it in the spur of the moment.
Yeah.
But if it was a matter of, okay, you can do that, but, you know, okay, that's on Monday night, this other thing's on Tuesday night, this is on Wednesday night, you know, that's, you know, like that, then there's a good chance that they wouldn't do it, you know, like that. Unless, of course, they were nerds. Then that's the way they would organize their life anyway. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is it regulates. But you see is that they're much more in control of their senses. Even you say that. They're not in control of their mind in the way of speculation. But the senses are controlled. You know, they may not like it, but it just works out that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea, is if you regulate something, then it loses some interest. I mean, some interest may still be there, but still it's less than if it's whatever you want to do.
And this is only for material activities. Spiritual, they gain by regulation. No?
Well, the point then... The thing is that if you regulate something, then you can develop that habit. Then again, it can be spontaneous. Right? But now it's spontaneous because of its connection to Krishna. Because you don't want it to become spontaneous on the material platform. So the regularity is what's going to create the bridge between the material and the spiritual. In other words, it's connected with liberation. Because retraction is connected with liberation, not with devotion. But the point is, if you're attracted to something else, how you'd be attracted to Krishna. So retraction is necessary. It's only necessary because it provides the facility, therefore, for facility. It doesn't get in the way of the natural affection that the living entity has for the Lord. Right? Right now, material desire gets in the way of the natural desire.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? The kid's sitting there, there's nothing else to do, and his books are sitting there, and so it's time to do his homework. So then he'll do his homework. But, you know, if, you know, the television's on in the next room, then...
Difficult.
Yeah, difficult. Does that make sense?
Then the materialist discovered that principle of the spontaneity with the credit cards. That's why it's so successful, right?
With the?
Credit card.
Yes, yes. You can just do whatever you want, because then...
Mm.
So it's they're using it to their advantage. You know, in other words, if you understand the economics, it doesn't matter which way the market's going, you can make profit, right? Like that. Unfortunately, in the modern system, somebody has to be going down for the other person to take advantage of it for his profit to go up. So while your credit ratings are, you know, getting more and more entangling, someone else is making the profit.
They're very regulated in their interest
rates. Yes, yes, they're very regulated and everything like that. So, yeah. And so then this way they become more and more spontaneous, thinking of newer and newer ways to get you entangled, to increase your lust. Yeah.
Mark, you said that which is related to devotion is pious and that is not a sin. So, sin can be interchangeable with impiety and sin are like synonymous?
Yeah, you can. But generally we'll take it sin means an unauthorized activity. Right? But ultimately, if it's not devotional service, it's all. You know, so even let's say someone's leading a very regulated life.
Mm-hmm.
But their regulated life is not in connection with Krishna. So now... It's still you're introducing regulation, but that regulation is in connection with Krishna. Right? Then they'll get over, because the regulation they're following is creating the facility for them to enjoy. In other words, your common person doesn't necessarily make much money because he is so distracted by opportunities to enjoy, he takes them as soon as they're there. While someone who has more facility knows that I don't take these smaller ones, and by doing that I can get something bigger. You know what I'm saying? But for the devotee, it's one's doing for Krishna everything, so one never takes any opportunity. So therefore you get the greatest result, and one is never distracted. Okay? Jnana refers to knowledge of self as distinguished from non-self, or in other words, knowledge that the spirit soul is not the body. Vijnana refers to specific knowledge of the spiritual soul's constitutional position and relationship to the supreme soul. Right? So that's why in English it sometimes doesn't come out so good. You know, because there's one word, knowledge.
Mm.
Right? Like that. So therefore we have knowledge of the self, and then realized knowledge is actually... So jnana means you know the difference between the body and the soul. That's knowledge. So one can have that. Vijnana means you understand the soul's relationship with the Supreme Lord. Right? So technically that's why the Maya bodies, even though they're functioning on the platform of vijnana moy, their actual knowledge they have is only jnana.
Mm.
Because their method actually of getting knowledge is again down on the second platform. Paroksha. They just hear from others. They don't actually experience it. But it means one Mayavadi hears from another Mayavadi about Brahmananda. But nobody's ever experienced it. So you're only hearing from someone else. But they've never actually experienced it. So they never even get to the platform of Manamoy. Or they're actually experiencing what they're performing. Right. So there on no different platform than basically, you know, a nice, you know, materialist. Yes.
Then how did they come at all to the conclusion? They never experienced. There was nobody who experienced them.
Has anybody been happy materially?
No, this is my life.
Has anybody been, have the fruit of workers, has anybody actually become happy?
Also not.
Yeah, so it's the same thing. You've heard about it. You know, you say, wow, you know, the big celebrity, they must be happy. The celebrities aren't happy. They're always right. You can't just walk down the street. You just can't go out and go shopping. You know, as soon as you do, there's a million people taking photographs and this and that. You can't do anything.
So it's just false propaganda?
Yes. The whole material world is false propaganda.
I mean, this is my artist.
Also. That's just another feature.
Another session of the film.
Yeah, something else.
Right. And in the same sense, we can say that the person, we didn't experienced any spiritual bliss and of being so destructive and neophytes. And we do believe those who are on more elevated platform for experiencing that. So can we put it in the same way?
So you didn't notice any difference between material food and prasad, or between going to a, you know, how you say, a Pink Floyd concert and going to the kirtan?
I didn't.
So then you experienced it.
Yeah, but same can you say about the materialist? If they become a little more refined, they go to the nature, they experience the difference between their job, you know, nasty boss and everything, they go to the nature, they experience relief.
That's relief.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't become positive.
Mm-hmm.
So that material happiness is just relief. So there is no real happiness. So it probably uses the term real happiness. Because it's positive.
Well, my point was more into when we speak about...
No, but we were talking about levels of consciousness. Means and how we gain our knowledge. So you have experience. But still it's something.
So it means
a candle in a, you know, in an ocean of darkness is still light.
So that was my point. Can we count it as a valid experience to go deeper?
Is that not what you're doing?
That's what I'm doing.
But you're worried about all the other living entities.
No, for the argument's sake, you know, when you present your point of view, like I'm thinking, you know, you present it as we experience it to some.
Yeah, yeah, but so what degree you taste it to that, just like if I give you one grain of sugar, right, you can experience it sweet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you don't have the volume of someone else, you know. Does that make sense? But the point is it's still the idea that you can get. So therefore, you're preaching or giving that association to others based on your experience. Does that make sense? But the point we're making in the Mayavadis is they never get beyond that. Actual impersonalists might get up to Anandamaya, but it's still a temporary situation in Anandamaya.
Mm.
But generally speaking, they never get past Vijnana, as far as situation. But here is that they're because the point is Brahman is the Lord, so he has to descend into it. So it hoaxages that it's the highest we'll get. But as Mayavadis and the Buddhists and all these others, they never get past the paroksha. They don't even get to aparoksha. Because aparoksha means you actually have to be following, you know, what is the religious duty. But then you can get aparoksha. So even socially, that's why devotees don't get much, because generally they don't follow their prescribed duty. If they do, then there's aparoksha. But if they don't, then... You know, so because you could, yeah.
Just to clarify, these Mayavadis, they're not actually on Vijnanamaya.
No. The Mayavadis, they call themselves impersonalists, but they're basically just a variety of pessimists. You can't be happy in the material world, so they're in that category.
They're just pessimists who read the Vedas.
Yeah, they're pessimists who define their pessimism. I mean, yeah, give support for their pessimism from the Vedas, that's all. But they're the same as Buddhists.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the Buddhists do it by non-Vedic, and they do it by Vedic. Mm. But otherwise, it's not real. Mayavadis are really not, it's not a real philosophy, a real situation. Impersonalism is real, but it's only partial.
Mm. Yeah.
But Mayavadis is nothing at all. Mm. But that they quote from scriptures and this and that and follow a sadhana and all that, we do the same thing. So those aspects are the same. It's just how you say, we have what we do, and it's authorized by scriptures, and then if others are doing it, nice.
Mm.
You know, it's just like, you know, we're supposed to be nice to people. That's the etiquette. And then we see a karmi being nice to somebody. So that gives example of that niceness. But it's not that now that karmi becomes fit to be our teacher, you know, in the way of now we'll go and ask him about something else.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? But you can learn from that. That's what it means that the Python sadhu has 22 gurus, because he can learn. He knows what he's learned from his spiritual master, and then applying that, then he sees so many situations, so then great things he can learn from their example. But it's in that specific aspect. You know, like one of the gurus, I think, was about the girl and her bangles, right? But he doesn't go talking about her ankle bells. You know what I'm saying? It's just that's one very specific thing. So wherever you find something of value, then it's a value, because everything's connected to Krishna anyway. But we see it through the eyes of our acharyas. So that means it must be authorized. We don't see things through someone else that gives something that's contradictory to what our acharyas say.
Mm.
Right? That's just, you know, whimsical. Mm.
I heard an example that the Mayavadis, in the chronology of thought from Buddhism to Shankara, and then the four acharyas.
Can you speak up a
little bit? I heard an example, like in the progression of thought from the Buddhists to the Mayavadis to the four acharyas to Sri Chaitanya. Like the Mayavadis actually put the foundation on the opposite direction. The four acharyas build the temple, and Sri Chaitanya installed Radha Krishna.
But the Mayavadis don't. It's Shankaracharya brought it across. The Mayavadis are
Shankaracharya.
Yeah, Shankaracharya, but he's not the Mayavadis. The Mayavadis are the followers of Shankaracharya. They have no real standing.
So sorry, the example is Shankaracharya put the foundation in the opposite direction, and the four.
I don't even know if you have to put the opposite direction. The difficulty is the example. This analogy is being given, but the parampara is already established, because the point is Ramanuja and Madhva and everybody. Where do they get their teachings from? Where's the foundation of their teachings? Right? In their own acharyas before them. So the foundation's already there. He simply brought the attention of the Buddhists back to the Vedas. That's all. But for Ramanuja and Madhva, it's not that without Shankara there'd be no basis of their movement. Their mission already has, it just would be very difficult, because the country would be totally full of Buddhists rather than partially full of Buddhists. You know, so the Mayavadis, you don't have to establish the Vedas, you have to establish a conclusion of the Vedas. But with the Buddhists, you have to establish the Vedas and then the conclusion of the Vedas. So it's just that much, he's just made it easier as part of the plan of the Lord, but not that he's the foundation, because then otherwise you're saying that he's the foundation. You know, and also we're building up this way. We generally descend.
Because Lord Chaitanya also told all the acharyas what to speak, what is their aspect of their, what is their philosophy. So they all, in their travels, met Lord Chaitanya and Mayapur. And so then he empowered them and gave them their, you know, their philosophy. You know, Vishishta Dvait, Vishuddha Dvait, Dvaita Dvait, like this. So still, even Shankar's ability is by Krishna's grace. You know what I'm saying? Depending upon the context, it can have a useful. But one has to be careful. So you say he built a foundation the opposite way. But the point is, this, what does that mean, the foundation the opposite way?
The analogy means that the building, the bigger the building, you need to go deeper inside.
So the more devotional you want to be, the more Mayavad philosophy has to be there to found it on. You understand? It's not that. Foundation is a foundation. Foundation you build on. But so what are we doing that we're building on Shankara's philosophy? You know what I'm saying? Nothing at all. You can say, well, he reestablished the Vedas. He reestablished for the Buddhists, but he didn't have to reestablish for the followers of the Vedic culture. Because there were always people who still followed the Vedas. It's just the predominance became Buddhist. You know, Shankara then did this, you know, he just removed Buddhism from this Indian subcontinent. That was his.
Saying he wasn't teaching Mayavadi philosophy?
He was giving the Vedic conclusion in words and that as such that you could on your own conclude. Just like Buddha, did he say anything at the, you know, the lecture of the rose? No. But people would conclude whatever they wanted. You know what I'm saying? So he gives a certain thing, and then he gives them the way how to speculate. He gives them that. That's why it's that the straight Mayavad means as Shankara gave it is not that much of a problem. You could explain everything properly. Mm-hmm. But his followers, their comments, and how they interpret that, that's where the problem comes in. Like he says, Vaja Govinda, Vaja Govinda, Vaja Govinda, Mudamate. You know, so you fools and rascals worship Govinda. You know, so that means Govinda, Krishna. But the others would say, oh no, Govinda means a spiritual master. You know, so then they're more of a problem. But the point is whatever he's been giving in an indirect way, the acharya is given a direct way, so why would we need to study his? And anything of his philosophy we study would anyway be given by the acharyas. You know, the Prabhupada used the green bird and the green tree example. He just says, like a green bird merges into a green tree, so what will the Mayavadi think?
Bird's gone.
Bird's gone, and they become one. But we'll look at it. Yes, the green bird went in the green tree. Now the green bird, you know, can enjoy himself in the green tree because that's his natural position. So they take it that you merge into Brahman. We understand now you're in the spiritual abode of the Lord. Then you can interact. You know what I'm saying? So he only takes it up to a point and stops. And so they come to these conclusions.
Is that?
Yeah, actually, the Mayavad philosophy is practiced. It's not actually Shankara.
Right.
It's based on Shankara.
Was there any one speaker within their life who established that doctrine following?
I think it's just the modes of nature. But, you know, probably if you ask them, they have their outstanding personalities. Because Shaivites were always there, and that has that also, that's the basis for impersonalism. The Shaivas and that stuff. Basically, material existences, because when you get, like it says, we get tired of not getting happy from the results of your work, then you take the mental speculations.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav Nandini.